Christine Dean here, and joining me in the studio is Chris Harwood, who I like to consider a resident musicologist and also the biggest Beatles fan that I have ever met, I think.
One of them, yeah. I've got, I think, about 120 Beatles records, which mm-hmm. is considerable that they only made 12 records in the studio, 12 actual albums, that I have that many distinct records at home, I think is kind of a geeky point of fact. But.
And, of course, yesterday the news came across Facebook, across everywhere, that George Martin, who was often referred to as the fifth Beatle, the producer that added so much to their work, that he had passed away. So what did you think when you heard that?
Sad, of course, very sad. When John Lennon died, I was young and was saddened by that, but didn't quite, I think, appreciate what he was. I was such a young boy at the time. When George Harrison died in the early 2000s, really saddened by that, and one then forgets that there really was a fifth Beatle, and it's a hotly contested title because, of course, you talk about their first drummer, Pete Best, their first bass player, Stu Sutcliffe, and Billy Preston, all these people who could lay claim to the title fifth Beatle. George Martin truly was the fifth Beatle because he was not just a producer, a person who sat in the studio and recorded whatever they played into their amplifiers, but he shaped and guided their music. He often arranged their music. He helped them experiment in the studio. He played on their records. He did so many different things for them that not only encouraged these fellows who started out as young boys in the studio, you know, just at the age of 21.
And when they first started out, they were just like hardworking musicians. They were out there doing cover songs, and they were just playing hours and hours.
They could give you a 2.5-minute song like nobody's business. But
and
he recognized that. Yeah, and then he said, you know, fellas, we can do a little more with this song. We can bring in a classical instrument to this. We could add some flute to this. We could add some different kind of drums to that. We can bring some strings for this. You know, when Paul McCartney brought in Yesterday in 1965, they tried it with the band. And he said, you know, I really hear this more as a string thing. And Paul was a little reluctant at first, and George Martin did an arrangement with a string quartet. And it was a Beatles song that only Paul actually played on. None of the other Beatles were involved. And just that kind of stretching out sideways. When he was at Parlophone, when he came in the 1950s and took over the Parlophone label, it was a novelty label. It did some Baroque stuff. It did a lot of comedy acts. It was sort of EMI's weird stepbrother kind of label. It wasn't really something that was a mainstream thing. And I think that kind of weirdness allowed George Martin to think about using non-traditional techniques in the studio, to be open-minded to trying new things. The prevailing philosophy in the studio at the time, for a lot of things, especially with classical music, was to make it sound like it would live, as if you were in the concert hall. We have to recreate the live experience. And with novelty acts, comedy acts, and things, zaniness sort of ensued. And so he was open-minded to trying weird things. And when the Beatles came along, when he brought them in, he realized that this could be a group that can create music not only as you would hear them do it on stage, but use the studio as an instrument, use the studio as a technique to create things that wouldn't necessarily work in a live setting. And so it's that kind of experimentation that was such a great collaboration for him and the Beatles together. But the thing is, he wasn't just a producer, and he wasn't just a sort of a mentor in that way. He was also a musician. He was an arranger. He loved orchestrating. He made movie themes, musical scores. He worked with a lot of other groups, of course, after the Beatles. But he'll always be remembered as the mentor and the guider of the Beatles' artistry for those 8 years they were in the studio together.
Well, we were going to play a few Beatles tracks, and you had some thoughts about them. And first, I think you wanted to play this kind of alternate version of...
Right. Let me explain, just set it up. This is a piano solo that he added to one of their songs, and this is what it sounds like at the original tempo.
And for those who are trying to play Name That Tune at home.
Yeah, it's the song In My Life, a John Lennon composition. And he tried it originally on a Hammond organ. Then he thought it would sound better with a bit of a Bach-like invention. And he tried to play it at the tempo of the song. And he wasn't quite as Glenn Gouldian enough, I think the phrase has been used, to play it at the intended speed of the piece. So he had them slow down the tape to half speed, played it an octave lower, and recorded it at that speed. It sounds very much like a piano. When they speed up the piano part and insert it into the In My Life recording. It gives it a very harpsichordian-like flair, which is, in fact, just what he wanted, and it worked out very well.
So that's actually how it sounded before it got sped up.
That was the actual live playing of him on the piano.
Yeah. Well, and now we're going to hear In My Life, so we can kind of compare and hear how it ended up. It's the Beatles on 103.3 KUMD. We are chatting here. I'm Christine Dean, along with Chris Harwood, talking about George Martin, who passed away yesterday. The Beatles, In My Life, on 103.3 KUMD. Christine Dean here chatting with Chris Harwood, who is both an announcer and also one of the most knowledgeable people about the Beatles that I have personally know. So we're talking about George Martin, who just passed away this week, and he was the producer for the Beatles, and he really added so much, as Chris was just talking about, to their work.
Yeah, and he wasn't a rock and roll fellow before they came along. He had done a few rock and roll acts, a skiffle band or two, and when Brian Epstein brought their demo tape in, he wasn't really impressed at first, but he liked their sense of humor. He liked that they were trying to write songs, and so he thought he'd give them a chance, and he thought, well, you know, what have we got to lose? I don't have a lot to at stake by giving them a chance in the studio. And after a few of their number one hits started filling up the coffers for EMI Records, he actually kind of broke trend and said, you know, rather than the 1 cent per record royalty, we should give these guys 2 cents per record. And EMI thought this was sacrilegious to suggest that these four fellows shouldn't each get a quarter penny per record. Maybe they should each get a half penny. EMI certainly made their money back. Electronic Music Instruments was the name what EMI stands for. And in fact, the profits from the Beatles records were what helped fund the development of the CAT scan, which is used in hospitals around the world. So EMI certainly made their money on the Beatles at 2 cents per record given to the boys. So that was fine. But George, again, as a musician, as an arranger, just somebody who was able to think about rock and roll not as something that should be kept out in the garage, but really can incorporate and bring in other instruments, other styles, other things, and really blend, make it into something more. And I think it's his guidance, not only their own geniuses, the Beatles, that helped transform what rock and roll and pop music could be in the 1960s.
And was he involved, you know, from when he started, was he involved till the end of the band, or did he at some point?
All the way through. Mm-hmm. Other than the Let It Be / Get Back album that wasn't recorded at Abbey Road Studios, all of their records were made at Abbey Road and with him at the helm. There were times, of course, when they were busy and often using three or four of the rooms at the same time, that he wasn't at the control board of every single recording. Jeff Emmerich, Alan Parsons, other people were at the desk doing some of the actual engineering. But as the producer, George Martin was there the whole time.
And we're going to hear one more Beatles tune this afternoon, and we're going to do Something. And what do you want to say about
it? Well, you know, I was thinking we could have played Yesterday or Eleanor Rigby, that really used strings and were almost exclusively strings and Beatles voices. But I like the thought of using Something as one of the many things that he did, where he brought in orchestral arrangements into rock and roll. And again, nothing, there were no sacred cows for George Martin. He didn't stick with the tried and true technique. So bringing in orchestrations into rock and roll, finding ways of making something greater out of two different styles was something he loved to do. And I think Something is, again, one of those really beautiful songs that George Harrison, as a songwriter, had really come to the fore, and George Martin for years hadn't quite recognized how good a songwriter he'd become. And this song came in for their last record, and George Martin was so impressed, and he added the string arrangement to this song.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. We're going to hear Something, and thanks so much for coming in and,
sure,
and sharing your thoughts.
Yeah, and as I said before, you know, when any one of the Beatles dies, it will be a very bad day for me, as the others have been. John Lennon dying was tragic, of course. It was terrible and shocking and violent, and George Harrison dying so young of cancer. George Martin was 90. It's not as if his death was a surprise. He's lived a full and rich and wonderful life and created so many wonderful songs. So it's sad to hear that he's died, but wonderful music is left behind.
A wonderful legacy, and we're going to hear part of that right now. It's the Beatles on KUMD.